an Osho Talk. From Unconsciousness to Consciousness, number 15.
Why is the world so sick today? Why are misery and tension increasing?
It is the outcome of all the idiotic ideas that have dominated humanity in the past. It was bound to happen. All the religions are responsible for it. What they have done whether knowingly or unknowingly is the cause of the misery, suffering, anguish of the whole humanity. Let us think the most fundamental causes one by one. The first, all the religions have been imposing the idea that God has created the world. And God is omniscient, omnipotent, omnipresent. He knows all. He is all powerful. He is everywhere. This idea prevented man to do anything to life to make it better, beautiful. When somebody all-knowing, all-powerful, everywhere present, is looking after the world, then what you can do, how far you can see, what can be your contribution? If God is the creator of the world, you cannot improve upon it. If you do anything, you can only harm it. You cannot inform it. You cannot be wiser than God. This idea is one of the most basic causes of the whole anguish in which the humanity is passing, and perhaps may perish in it. Just think the way I see that there is no God. Who is creating the world? Who is looking after the world? Don't throw this responsibility unto someone who exists not. It is we who are here. In every way responsible to make our mark, the opportunity. Remove God and put man in his place, and you will have a totally different world. The suffering is absolutely unwanted. The anguish is our stupidity. Man can live a tremendously rich blissful, ecstatic life. But the first thing is, he has to accept his responsibility. All the religions have been teaching you to shirk your responsibility. Throw it unto God. And there is no God. You don't do anything because you think God is going to do everything. And there is no God to do anything. Then what else you can expect? What is happening and has happened and is going to happen is the natural outcome of this idea of a creator. If man was told that this is your existence, that you are responsible, whatever you are, whatever you do, and whatever happens around you. Be mature, don't remain childish. But this God does not allow you to mature. His godness depends on your immaturity, on your childishness. The more stupid you are, the more gullible you are, greater is the God. The more intelligent you are, the lesser is the God. If you are really intelligent, there is no God. Then this existence is there. You are there. Then create. But the creator does not allow you to become the creator. My whole approach is that you are to become the creator. You have to release your creative energies. And this is possible only if this God, who is nothing but a Godot, is removed, absolutely removed from your vision of life. Yes, in the beginning you will feel very empty because that place of God in you has been filled millions of years he was there, the sacred shrine in your heart was filled with the idea of God. Now suddenly throwing it out, you will feel empty, afraid, lost. But it is good to feel empty. It is good to feel afraid. It is good to be lost, because this is the reality. And what you were feeling before was only fiction. Fictions cannot help much, may give you some consolation. But consolation is not a good thing. What is needed is transformation, not consolation. What is needed is treatment of all the diseases that you have been carrying, not consolation. So the first thing is, remove God. Don't wait for any Godot. There is none. There has never been any. Friedrich Nietzsche said, I disagree with him, but my disagreement is totally different from the disagreement of others, of all others who disagree. Nietzsche says, God is dead. Of course, Christians have differed, Mohammedans have differed, Hindus have differed, Buddhists have differed, everybody has been against Friedrich Nietzsche. I am also against, but my reason of being different is that God is not dead because he has never been alive. Even to say God is dead is to accept that he was there, now he is no more. No, he was never there in the first place. Man has lived under a fiction. And this situation, this misery, this increasing tension, the tension is so much that now, in the most advanced countries, the second greatest factor of death is not a disease, but suicide. One feels so utterly tense day after day, and there seems to be no way out. And the anguish goes on increasing. And one cannot see even the reason for what we are suffering. Why we should be suffering? What we have done? Life itself seems to be worthless. A point comes in the intelligent man's life when he sees it is all futile, meaningless. Then why go on dragging? Why not finish it? Why not get rid of it? It has not given you anything except pain. It is not going to give you anything else except pain. Yes, there is a opium somewhere. The hope, perhaps tomorrow things may be different. Perhaps if not today, tomorrow you may be able to get some moment of bliss. But even then, it does not seem to be worth such a long caravan of miseries, and then once in a while a moment when you can smile, laugh, and by the time you have smiled, it is gone. Perhaps that moment is also your imagination. Just to keep yourself going, you start dreaming of things which are not really there. You wanted them to be there. That's actually the function of dreaming. Do you know? It has been a strange discovery of modern psychology. For centuries, we had thought that dreams are useless. Just a disturbance in the night. To have a dreamless sleep. Has been thought the healthy goal. Yoga. For 10,000 years has been teaching that dreamless sleep is the most beautiful experience. But what we have found recently goes just against this whole thing. You can drop your dreamless moments of sleep without any harm to you, but you cannot drop your dreams. If you sleep 8 hours, then almost 2 hours you have in fragments. In total, 2 hours sleep without dreams. 6 hours sleep with dreams. It has been experimented. Now we know there are instruments which give the indication whether the person is dreaming or not dreaming. Even without instruments, if you watch his lids, eyelids, you can immediately know. If his eyes are moving inside the lids, he is dreaming. Because he is seeing things, movement. If the eyes are static, not moving, and the lids show no movement of the inside eyes, that means dreams have stopped. No sophisticated instruments are needed, but now we have sophisticated instruments which make a graph when the person is dreaming, when the person is not dreaming. Just like a cardiogram. They disturbed few sleepers when they were dreaming. They will disturb them immediately. They will wake them up. They will allow them only those 2 hours of non-dreaming. In the morning, they will be utterly exhausted. Lustless, with no desire to live even. This was strange, because all the old yoga in India, in Tibet, in China, different schools and different people not connected with each other at all. They have always been telling, if you can have 2 hours of a dreamless sleep, that is enough nourishment, enough to rejuvenate you. It has not been found true. But if you disturb those 2 hours when they are not dreaming and allow them those 6 hours of dreaming, in the morning they get up so fresh, so young, so rejuvenated, so full of life and juice, and so eager to live. When for the first time it was discovered, it was a shock. Dreams are absolutely necessary for these people. For what reason? They have not been able to find the reason. They will never be able to find, because that reason can be found only through deep meditation. There is no other way to find it. By psychological experiments, they will not find it. What is the reason? But through meditation, something happens which is dreamless, sleepless. Both are not there. Neither the dream is there, nor the sleep is there. You are fully awake. The body is fast asleep in a deep rest. But your consciousness is absolutely cloudless. There is no sleep inside like a flame. You are alert, awake, watching. That there is nothing to watch. The body is asleep and there is nothing to watch, but the watcher is. You can only watch the watcher. You can only observe the observer. You can only be aware of your awareness. But there is no sleep, no dream. And in the morning, you are as fresh as it is possible to be. So the psychologists will not be able, they have not been yet able and will never be able to know unless they start moving towards meditation. And there seems to be no sign of their movement. In fact, they are very antagonistic to meditation. And I can understand why they are antagonistic to meditation. Because meditation can dissolve all your problems, can dissolve all your psychic anxieties, and with it goes the whole profession of the psychologist. Just as the priest has been afraid that God should not be doubted, the politician has been afraid that the priest should not be doubted. Because if God is doubted, the priest is gone. His priesthood is gone. And there are millions of priests in the world, Hindus, Catholics, Jews, rabbis, ministers, missionaries, pundits, imams, Shankaracharyas, millions of priests in the world who depend on a single concept of God. Drop that idea and all these will be nowhere. Right now they are on great prestige, power. Who will be the Pope when there is no God? What will be his position? This Polak will have to go back to Poland. And Poland is communist now. He will become a laughing stock. God is not there with him. The Holy Ghost disappears. The sun disappears. He is the central focus of the whole fiction. Remove that central idea and the whole palace made of playing cards, simply falls on the ground. Just a little whip is needed. The psychologist is afraid of meditation. Now, psychology is a big profession. Jews never do small things. They created this stupid Christianity. And for 2,000 years they have been grudging that we missed the chance. We would have made a great profession that the Christians are doing. How we missed Jesus. It was simply a great business. And we missed the point. We couldn't see that this man is going to be such a big deal. He proved the biggest business deal in the world. Jews cannot forgive him. If they get him again, they will crucify him again. For another reason this time. That why you did not tell us in the first place that this is going to be a big business? And we would not have crucified you. And then they missed the second Sigmund Freud. But this time they were more aware. They have not missed so much. 90% profession is still in Jewish hands. All the great psychologists and psychoanalysts and therapists, 90% of them are Jews. It is their monopoly. And Freud single-handedly created the whole profession, the whole science. He was very much afraid of meditation. Tremendously afraid. Jung, his most intimate disciple, and in the beginning, the possible successor, was so much afraid of meditation that when he came to India, wherever he went, and he went to Khajuraho, to Taj Mahal, to Fatehpur Sikri, old ancient places, everywhere he was suggested that you should go to Arunachal. In the South India, very south, deep south, there is a man, Sri Raman, who can give you immense insight into human nature about which you have been working your whole life. But he was afraid to go there. And Raman was certainly the man who could have given him, shared with him something of meditation, but he will not go. Outright he rejected that all this meditation is unscientific. Now, his statement is unscientific because nobody has tried to explore meditation scientifically. On what grounds he is saying that all this meditation business is unscientific? I know the space when there is no sleep, no dream, and still I am there. Certainly dreams are needed, but not by me. Perhaps 99.9% people are even more need dreams, 6-hour dreams in the night. And what do you think? That's all? Are you not dreaming in the day too? Any time close your eyes and you will find the dream is there running. The dream is always there. You are listening to me and the dream will be there. You are walking on the road and the dream is moving inside you. Of course, when you are waking, your attention is divided. You have to be alert of the outside world. Otherwise, people think you are spaced out. You are not spaced out, you are spaced in. Your attention is no more out. You are clouded with the dreams and you have forgotten the objective world. Six hours in the night and how many hours in the day? Nobody has yet measured how many hours in the day. I don't think that you have even 2 hours in day just as you have in the night. Without dreams. I don't think you have 2 hours in a day without dreams. Because if you can have 2 hours without dreams, fully awake, those 2 hours will become your meditation. They will reveal immensely valuable secrets to you. But the ordinary humanity, the average man, needs dreams. Why? Because life in reality is so unsatisfactory, so ugly. So stinkingly ugly. Those dreams substitute it. They are beautiful. They bring fragrance in your life. Hope, fiction. They help you to remain sane. The reality will drive you insane. And to me, God, the Holy Ghost, and the Son, and the Pope, infallible Pope. Of course, he has to be infallible. He represents the Messiah, the only begotten Son of God. How can he be fallible, infallible Pope? And every religion have similar things. You need these people. They are fictions created by our misery. And cunning people using your misery to exploit you and to have their power trip. The politician needs these people also. Even a mad politician like Adolf Hitler needs the blessings of God. If there is no God, who is going to bless Adolf Hitler? And the chief Christian priest in Germany blesses him. Now see the miracle. Adolf Hitler is being blessed by God's priest that you will succeed. Churchill is being blessed in England by the same God's priest that you will be successful. Benito Mussolini is blessed by Pope himself that you will be successful. And nobody sees the contradiction that one God, one infallible Pope, and this German priest is under the Pope. But the Pope has to bless Benito Mussolini. Otherwise, Mussolini will throw him away. Put somebody else as the Pope who is ready to bless him. Benito Mussolini is not a fascist when he is in power. Even the Pope says he is the most wise man, most democratic, most human. Benito Mussolini. And the same Pope, after Benito Mussolini is defeated, will declare him the fascist. And these are infallible people. Now, another politician is there who has to be blessed, who is against Benito Mussolini. They will bless him too. Can't you see a simple conspiracy between the priest and the politician? The masses are befooled. The priest gives the sanction from God, certifies that this is the right man to be the president. This is the right man to be the vice president. The prime minister. Of course, the politician needs, because the masses will listen to the priest. priest is impartial. He has nothing to do with politics. He is above politics. He is in the hands of the politicians. Dalai Lama is the Pope, in fact, higher than the Pope for the Buddhists, because he is not a representative of Jesus, he is a reincarnation of Buddha himself. Not a representative, but a reincarnation of Buddha himself. Dalai Lama escaped Tibet because China became communist and claimed that Tibet is part of China. Once it was. 200, 300 years before, there was a time when a Chinese emperor has conquered Tibet, and Tibet was part of China. And of course, the Tibetans and Chinese belong to the same race. Dalai Lama had to escape from there because he was both the religious head and the political head. And he had never thought that anybody is going to attack on Tibet. It is so secluded a country on top of the world and so far away from every other place. No railway trains are there, no cars are there, no roads are there, no technology has reached. People are still living at least 5,000 years back. He had to escape because he had not a big army. He had never thought. His predecessors have never thought that anybody is going to attack. To attack is so difficult. To reach to Tibet is so difficult. But Mao was determined to take it over. It was a very significant place for him not to live alone. Because Russia can take it. And then it will become a tremendously dangerous thing for China. India can take it, then too it will become tremendously difficult for China. So before anybody else starts thinking, China jumped in. And Tibet is a small country. And the Dalai Lama had just a small police force, perhaps 100 policemen, to guard the palace. That was all. There was no need for anything else. Army, they have never thought about the army. But the incarnation of Buddha escapes from Tibet, forgets about the people whom he has been exploiting, his predecessors have been exploiting for thousands of years. Tibet is a poor country, but Dalai Lama is one of the richest men of the world. The whole palace of Lhasa is filled with gold and nothing else. It's strange even to think that Dalai Lama escaped with all the gold from the Lhasa palace, not all the ancient scriptures. Because there was a clear choice, you can take this or you can take. Scriptures were so many that you will need thousands of carts to take them to India. And he had so much gold, and gold has to reach first. Because without gold, what he is going to do in India? And the refugees that are following him from Tibet, what they are going to do? So his scriptures were left. Gold was carried. This is the incarnation of Buddha. China immediately crowned his younger brother, Panchen Lama, as the head of the country. Politicians can't do without it because the masses won't listen. Now the masses are perfectly happy. What it makes a difference? Dalai Lama or Panchen Lama, he was going to be his successor. He is the second in number. If Dalai Lama dies or anything happens, Panchen Lama will become the head. And the Dalai Lama has escaped. And China made it a laughing stock that you believed in him and he deceived you. Not only that, he has stolen all your gold. Now, in India, Jawaharlal Nehru was the Prime Minister when Dalai Lama came there. He welcomed him. That was his politics. Because in India, Buddhism once was the religion of almost of the whole country. But then, after Buddha's death, Hindus destroyed everything that was possible. So either the Buddhist monks had to escape, that's how Tibet became Buddhist, Ceylon became Buddhist, Japan became Buddhist, China became Buddhist, Korea became Buddhist, Vietnam became Buddhist, Indochina became Buddhist, Burma became Buddhist. These are all, the whole of Asia, except India, where Buddha was born and where he worked, where he transformed people. In India, Buddhism completely disappears. Either the Buddhist monk has to leave India, or he was killed, burnt alive, or reduced to the lowest caste in India, the untouchable, Sudra. The chamars in India, the shoemakers in India, they are all Buddhist, reduced, forced to make shoes only and do nothing. In a country like India, where vegetarianism is thought to be one of the fundamentals of religion, who is going to kill animals and who is going to make shoes and other leather things? The Buddhists were forced, if you want to be alive and want to live here, then this profession you choose. Everybody was happy, Hindus and Jainas, all were happy that they have been put in their right place. But what happened after independence? One man, Dr. Ambedkar, started converting the Chamars, the shoemakers, back towards Buddhism. He converted thousands of people into Buddhism. Back. He created a great movement back to Buddhism, and there was a possibility that millions will turn. He died, but still he left a strong force of Buddhism behind him. Now, Nehru wanted this force to be with him. Dalai Lama was perfectly the right person, because all those Buddhists will listen to Dalai Lama, and Dalai Lama has to listen to Jawaharlal, otherwise go back or go anywhere else you want to go. Jawaharlal gave him a space against China. China raised the question that this will be a surety that we are no more friends. You hand over the Dalai Lama to us. They wanted the Dalai Lama in their hands because Panchen Lama is not so powerful. Although the Tibetans have accepted him, but the Dalai Lama was their chosen leader. This has been imposed by the Chinese. Reluctantly, they have accepted. If the Dalai Lama was given back to China, they would have forced him to be in Tibet, be again the Dalai Lama, but instructions will be received from Mao Zedong. The country will be under us. Nehru refused to deliver the Dalai Lama to him. You will be surprised, even a country like America, just 4 years before Dalai Lama was invited by American Buddhists, because there are few Zen monasteries and few American Buddhists, they had invited Dalai Lama. American government stopped him by entering into the country, because that will create enmity with China. And for America, Dalai Lama has no meaning, because these few Buddhists don't count. What I am telling you is that these politicians and these priests have been constantly in conspiracy, working together hand in hand. The politician has the political power, the priest has the religious power, the politician protects the priest blesses the politician, And the masses are exploited, sucked. Their blood is sucked by both. Remove God and you remove the politicians. You remove the politics. You remove the priest. You remove the conspiracy between the priest and the politician. And with these two removed, 50% of your miseries will disappear. And the idea of God gives you dreams of a better life after death, perhaps in paradise, or in another incarnation. So there is not so much to be worried about this life. It is a small thing. What does it matter in millions and millions of light years? What does it matter 70 years? It does not count at all. There are stars so far away from us that the day you were born, their rays on that day started moving towards the earth. They have not reached yet. You will die. Perhaps sometime then those rays will reach. And the rays move with a tremendous speed. 186,000 miles per second. For that star, you never existed. Before you were born, and before you died, no ray could reach here to see you, to touch you. As far as that star is concerned, and millions of stars are there that far, what to say about you? There are stars whose rays have not reached the earth since the earth came into existence. And it may go out of existence, and those stars will never come to know that there has been a planet like Earth. So what to say about your Alexander the Great, Napoleon Bonaparte, Peter the Terrible, they don't count at all anywhere in this vast universe. 70 years. So religions have been telling to people 70 years don't count. This misery will pass away. And if you allow it to pass away without struggling against it, the next life, life beyond death, is going to be very rewarding to you. These are the people who have prevented from changing any situation on the earth. Particularly, they have prevented the transformation of men Because all the suffering that you see all around is rooted in men. And if the man remains the same, this tension will go on increasing, this anguish will go on increasing. There is every possibility that by the end of this century, the whole humanity may commit suicide, a global war. And it is not very difficult to think about its possibility. Because the people who are in power, the people who have nuclear weapons, are so third-rate. It seems that to be a successful politician, you have to be absolutely unintelligent, fanatic, lying, promising continuously, knowing perfectly well that no promises being to be fulfilled, cheating, using beautiful words, and hiding ugly realities. Now each big power country is loaded with nuclear weapons. So much so that if we want, we can destroy 700 Earths like this right now. That much nuclear power is there available. To destroy each person 700 times, although it is not needed, one time is enough. But politicians don't want to take any chance. Their faces are all masks. They say one thing, they do another thing. And the power is in such people's hands. Any crack part can push a button. And can finish the whole humanity, the whole life on the earth. But perhaps deep down, humanity also wants to get rid of it. Perhaps individually they are not courageous enough to commit suicide, but on the mass scale, they are ready. Always remember, individuals have not committed great crimes. It is always crowds which commit great crimes. Because in a crowd, no individual feels, I am responsible for what is happening. I am just being with the people. Individually, when you commit something, you have to think three times before committing it. That what you are doing, is it right? Does your consciousness permit it? But no, when there is a crowd, you can be last in the crowd. Nobody will ever discover that you were also part of it. Even a country like Germany, which can be said to be one of the most intelligent, cultured, sophisticated country, has given great poets, painters, scientists, philosophers. In every dimension, Germany's contribution is great. But one simply feels amazed that this country of Hegel, Feuerbach, Kant, Marx, Freud, Einstein, this country came under the power of Adolf Hitler, who was nothing but a madman. What happened? Even a man like Martin Heidegger, who was the topmost philosopher of contemporary world, he supported Adolf Hitler. It is so shocking to think. I have always appreciated the man because his intelligence is incomparable. Other philosophers are miles behind. Sartre, Marcel, Jaspers, miles behind. Nobody is close even to this man. Even to understand him is not easy. But he supported Adolf Hitler. And when Germany lost the war and Adolf Hitler committed suicide, then he was as if awakened from a dream. Then he realized what he has done. This man was simply mad. And I have supported him. That's what I say. Even when your eyes are fully open, you may be dreaming. Now he was dreaming. And he was projecting his dream on Adolf Hitler because he saw that this man has power, has the power to impress masses, which Martin Heidegger had not. He could not even deliver a single address because everybody will leave. The way he talked, the things he talked about, the complications that he brought in. Now who was going to listen to him? He was professor of philosophy in the university, in fact in many universities, For the simple reason, because wherever he was professor, his students stopped coming to the department. He was far above. Just, he will go above your head. And if this man is going to be your examiner too, you are finished. And when he will be there for 2-3 years in one university, then the university will ask him, you move, nobody is going to come here. Then finally they decided that made him the vice chancellor of a university, so he does not teach. He had no power over masses, and he saw Adolf Hitler. Masses were just spellbound, almost in a state of hypnosis. So he projected that what he dreams, how the world should be, this man can make it possible. But he was innocent. He does not understand that this man has his own mad ideas that he is going to do to the world. He is not going to listen to any philosopher. And at least Martin Heidegger was absolutely beyond him. He would not have even made intelligible conversation with him. The religions have given the man fictions to live. Now all those fictions are broken, and man has nothing left to live. Hence the anguish. Anguish is not an ordinary state of anxiety. Anxiety is always centered upon a certain problem. You don't have money, there is anxiety. You don't have enough clothes and the colds are coming, you have a certain anxiety. You are sick and you don't have medicine, and there is anxiety. Anxiety is about a certain problem. Anguish has no problem as such. Just to be seems to be fruitless, futile. Just to breathe seems to be dragging yourself unnecessarily. Because what is going to happen tomorrow? Yesterday also you were thinking something is going to happen tomorrow. Now this is yesterday's tomorrow, which has come as today, and nothing has happened, and this has been going on for years, and you go on projecting for tomorrow. A moment comes when you start realizing that nothing is going to happen. Then there is the state of anxiety. In anxiety, only one thing seems to be somehow to get out of this circle of life. Hence the suicide, increasing rate of suicide. and an unconscious desire of humanity that the third world war happens. So I am not responsible that I committed suicide, the world war, killed everybody and killed me too. But the whole situation can be changed. Just we have to change the premises of the old man. Remove God, remove heaven and hell, remove the idea of a future reward, remove the idea that some Messiah is to come to redeem you from your suffering. Remove the idea that anybody else is responsible for your misery and suffering. Remove the idea that somebody can give meaning to your life. Accept that you are alone, born alone, and you will die alone, and you have to accept the fact that you are living alone, maybe in a crowd, but you are living alone, maybe with your wife, girlfriend, boyfriend. But they are alone in their aloneness, you are alone in your aloneness, and those alonenesses don't touch each other, never touch each other. That you may live with someone for 20 years, 30 years, 50 years, it makes no difference. You will remain strangers, always. And always you will be strangers. Accept the fact that we are strangers, that we don't know who you are, that you don't know who I am, I myself don't know who I am, so how you can know? But people are presuming that the wife should know the husband. The husband is assuming the wife should know the husband. Everybody is functioning as if everybody is a mind reader. And he should know before you say it your needs, your problems. He should know, she should know. And they should do something. Now, this is all nonsense. Nobody knows you, not even you. So don't expect it that anybody else should know you. It is not possible. In the very nature of things, we are strangers. Perhaps by chance, we have met and we are together, but our aloneness is there. Don't forget it, because you have to work upon it. Only from there is your redemption, your salvation. But you are doing just the opposite. How to forget your aloneness? The boyfriend, the girlfriend, go to the movie, the football match. Get lost in the crowd. Dance in the disco. Forget yourself. Drink alcohol, take drugs. But somehow, don't let this aloneness come to your conscious mind. And there lie the whole secret. You have to accept your aloneness, which in no way you can avoid. And there is no way to change its nature. It is your authentic reality. It is you. And you are escaping from yourself, then there will be misery. There will be problems. And in solving one problem, you will create 10 more, and so on and so forth. Soon there will be only problems surrounding you, and you will be drowning in your own problems. Then you call, why the tensions are increasing? Why there is so much suffering? Why there is so much misery? As if somebody has a ready-made answer for it. Yes, somebody has it. It is you. Because I have found the answer within me, hence I say to you with authority, the authority is not derived from any god, from any messiah, from any Veda, from any Quran, Bible. No. The authority is derived from my experience. My whole life I have lived amongst millions of people, but never for a single moment forgetting that I am alone, that my loneliness is unreachable. Nobody can reach to it. It is available only to me, because it is me. So the moment you stop escaping from yourself, drowning yourself in all kinds of drugs, relationships, religions, service to humanity. Now few are doing that. It is nothing but escape from themselves. But their ego is fulfilled because they are doing service to humanity. I know many servants, great servants, and when I talked with them and brought them to the point, kneeled them down exactly, they all broke into tears and said, perhaps you are right. We are escaping. But we were thinking we are going to serve these poor people. But it seems that we have not been able to solve any of our own problems. This seemed to be a very preferable escape. You can put aside your problems And how can you be so selfish to be bothered by your problems when the whole humanity is suffering, when everybody is suffering? Help them. So you can, in a beautiful garb, put aside your problems, that even to think about them is selfish. But with those problems, whom you are going to help and how? You will dump all your problems on somebody whom you are going to serve. The husband will dump on the wife will dump on the husband, the parents will dump on the children. And everybody is dumping his problems on others without seeing that the other is also trying to do the same. Stop dumping problems on others. You have to solve your problems, and every individual has to solve his problems. And then problems are not so many. It is one problem which you have not solved that has created a chain of unsolved problems. And the problem is how to enter your aloneness without fear. And the moment you enter your aloneness without fear, it is such a beautiful and ecstatic experience that there is nothing compared to it. It is not a problem at all. It is the solution of all your problems. But you have made it a problem because you have listened to others and followed them. Blind, following blind leaders and priests. And they are all going in a circle. And everybody believes that the man ahead of him is capable of seeing. And the same is the case of the man who is ahead. He is holding somebody else's coat or shirt, believing that he knows where he is going. And they all are moving in a circle. Nobody is going anywhere. The followers are following the leader is following the followers. You have to stop and come out of this stupid game of followers and leaders. You have just to be yourself and remember that you were born alone. So aloneness is your reality. That you will die alone. So aloneness is your reality. And between birth and death, between these two points where you are absolutely alone, how the life can be anything else? It is in each moment alone. So accept it joyously. Go into it as much as possible, as many times as possible. This is the temple of my religion. It is not made of rocks, marbles. It is made of your consciousness. Go into it, and the deeper you go, farther away are the problems. The moment you touch the center of your being, you have arrived home. And from that point, you can come out and do whatsoever you want to do, it will be a help. It will be service. It will be sharing. You will not be dumping anything on anybody. On one hand, the priest has given you the desire for the other world, the ambition for the other world, for a tomorrow. The politician is giving you this world. You can become the president. Anybody in America can become the president. All citizens are equal. What a nonsense. No two citizens are equal. And only the most cunning is going to become the president. Not all. At least not those who would have been of any help to anybody. Ambitious people can only reach to the highest political post in any country because it is a race. And you need to be utterly ambitious to stake everything on it. And you are not to bother what you are doing, whether it is right or wrong. The end, you have to keep in mind and do whatsoever you feel right to reach the end, whether it is right or wrong. No question. If you fail, everything is wrong. If you succeed, everything is right. Success is right. And failure is wrong. That's what the politicians have been training everybody. Drop all that the priests and the politicians have put into you. And as you unburden yourself, you will start glimpses of your pure being. That's what I call meditation. Once tasted, it transforms forever. One question.
The Christian Bible begins with the statement, "In the beginning was the Word." Do you agree?
There has been no creation. How can there be the beginning? The creation is continuous. It is creativity. Back you move, you will not find the beginning. Ahead you go, you will not find the end. It is beginningless, endless, creative energy. So in the first place, there was no beginning. God never created the world. There is no God. And the Bible says, in the beginning was the world. That is the most ridiculous thing to say. If we assume, just for the argument's sake, that there was a beginning, then I will say, in the beginning there was silence. How there can be word in the beginning? Just look at the idea, how can be the word in the beginning? Then what was before the word? Of course, there must have been silence before the word disturbed it. And silence means much more, because that's the silence I am trying you in many ways to go into. And it was in the beginning, and it is in the middle, and it will be in the end, because at the very center of this whole creativity, of this tremendous creativity of existence, at the very center there is silence.
The word content and voice recording on this audio format are the copyright of Osho International Foundation. Copyright dates 1953 through 2003. All rights reserved. Reproduction in any media is prohibited.